Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland, made with heart and passion. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
Season 2 of Meat and Three is almost here. We're kicking off with a show all about football.
I am excited. It's so much fun.
We'll tell you how to master the tailgating scene with help from some Atlanta chefs.
The sky's the limit when it comes to tailgating.
Yeah, do something that you can pull off without stressing yourself too much.
Then we'll look at what's good and bad about players' diets, whether they're an NFL star or just made the JV team at their high school.
And that's when I was told the first time, well, just take them to McDonald's and feed Big Macs and milkshakes.
There's a greater percentage of guys that have a clear focus on what they're putting in their body.
You know, in SEC school, people are fans, but we also have to realize that they're kids. They're 18 to 22, 23-year-olds.
Subscribe to Meat and Three wherever you listen to podcasts and be the first to know when season 2 drops. And welcome to
Forget About It,
HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Rachel Jacobs.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Hosted on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Basically anywhere you find your favorite
podcasts. Anywhere
podcast.
You find great podcasts, like this one.
All right, announcement. So Kuzme's not with us this weekend because he is finishing a brew. It's actually an anniversary brew. Fifth Hammer's turning one
what?
On September 29th.
Oh, my God. It can drink?
Yeah.
Oh, my
almost.
God.
So the only announcement that I have is Blocktoberfest is coming up. If you are in the New York City area, there will be over 25 of your favorite New York City breweries at a festival on October 6th from 1 to 5 p.m. at The Well in Bushwick, Brooklyn, or East Williamsburg, depending on your sense of geography.
Depending on your real estate agent.
Yes. anyway, it's going to be a great time, and you can find out more information and buy tickets at nycbrewed.com. Chris and I will be there representing Fifth Hammer, as well as a lot of other New York City breweries. It's always a really, really good time.
Yeah, I've heard really good things about it. And The Well is just like a really cool space. There's a lot of great beers there. There's a lot of great seating and a big outdoor area. And if you haven't been there, even if you can't make it to this event, definitely you should drop by.
Yep. Also, this neighborhood is up and coming. Speaking of Bushwick, East Williamsburg, I think we congratulated KCBC last week.
That's right.
We headed, actually, after the show last week, we headed over to their second anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
So happy to KCBC. And then Innerborough Spirits and Ales, which is also here in Bushwick, actually a short walking distance away. Just turned 2 as well. So happy birthday to them. My brother has been in town from Atlanta. He's flying out tonight, but I've been out of the brewery a lot this last week. And it so happened to coincide with a heck of a lot of evening events. So I've actually been to like 5 or 6 breweries in the last week, at least maybe more. which has been pretty cool to see. So today we went on a graffiti walking tour of Bushwick.
Oh, no.
Dude, it's holy cow. I had no idea. So if you don't know, there's a ton of graffiti art in Bushwick. There's something called Bushwick the Bushwick Arts Collective. Yeah. Bushwick Collective? Bushwick Arts Collective?
Sure. Yeah, Arts Collective.
So I've walked by a bunch of this just, you know, going to KCBC or here or whatever, but never really walked the whole thing. And wow, there's some awesome art. And it was a lot of fun. But we just so happened to be walking where Braven is going in, and sure enough, their soft opening is tomorrow, actually. So they will be open for business. They're the newest. They've been brewing either gypsy or contract or like partner brewing, where they were actually doing the brewing in another facility, and they're actually opening a brewery and restaurant here in Bushwick, actually just a couple of blocks from where we are. So Braven Brewing. So they'll be open, I think, they should be open next week. Anyway, cool spot.
Cool.
Yeah, very cool.
Congratulations to them.
Congrats. Oh, it's a good time for breweries in Brooklyn. And speaking of good times for breweries in Brooklyn, we've got two brewers from two different breweries in Brooklyn here tonight. We have on Jason Saylor from Strong Rope Brewing. You might have heard him on episodes 171, 152, and 87. It goes way back to before Strong Rope even existed. Yep. And we have Jeff Lyons from Keg and Lantern, who we had on episode 195. Sweet. Hey, guys, how you doing?
What episode are we on now?
We are on episode 233.
Okay. Whew. Yes. And so, before this last week's journey, I guess it started last Thursday, so a week ago,
yes.
Right? That's, yes. And, we were at Five Boroughs for to brew the collaboration beer that will be canned to be debuted at Blocktoberfest.
Yep.
And I ran into Bray Taylor, who's our co-brewer, and he's like, hey, I'm headed down to Strong Rope. And I was like, ooh, I left my poncho there. Can I come with you?
I did leave your poncho
so
there.
We rolled in, and we sat down and had some beers with Jason. And I realized we hadn't had you on for a while, and you are doing some amazing stuff at Strong Rope.
Thank you.
So I invited him to come on tonight and to specifically to speak more about New York grown ingredients.
Of course.
And then also your amazing manipulation of Scottish ale yeast.
I manipulate it well.
And then I've ran into Jeff several times in the last week, and I was like, ooh, Jeff would be great too, because you also use a lot of New York State ingredients very well.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about, we've covered some of this in past shows, but assuming not everybody's been able to make it through all the shows, and maybe not the ones. Let's talk a little bit about the farm license in New York State. So what is the farm brewing license?
Yeah, the farm brewery license. Let's get this a little closer. The farm brewery license is the license designation that brewers can adopt or be part of that gets a brewery to allows them to brew beer, but they need to use a certain amount of New York State ingredients as a part of that license designation, and they get a couple benefits and everything as a part of it. Right now, the license designation started in about 2012, and right now states that you have to use about 20% New York State hops and malts per beer. And that switches to 60% in 2019, beginning in 2019, and then jumps to 90% in 2024. So it's we're kind of at that first major kind of milestone, I guess, if you will, to jump that ingredient usage above that kind of 50% threshold. So it's a pretty big milestone, and it's gonna be interesting to see what happens. There's a lot of breweries. There's a lot of breweries that are somewhat worried about it. There's a lot of breweries that are embracing it. But it's going to be, I think it's a fascinating time, and I don't know exactly where it's going to go from here.
So it looks like we got some stuff to look forward to next year about when it switches over.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, and you can hold both licenses as well. You can, which is what we do.
Yes.
And in that case, you have to brew a certain number of barrels of New York State beer per year.
Yeah,
at this point in time,
right? And I don't remember exact, but it's a lot less overall. I think it's just a handful of barrels. And the thing is, when it first came about, the main benefit of the New York State Farm Brewery License was to be able to sell pints directly to consumers. So that was really what drove a lot of breweries that maybe would have not otherwise use New York ingredients to jump on it. But and then the state decided that they would then push that benefit to the overall brewing community, which I think in the long run makes more sense, because I think it was better for the overall beer ecosystem, the breweries within the entire state, not just the farm breweries, to grow and foster a good relationship with consumers and really create an environment for them to thrive. You know, it's so that switch, while I think was a good thing in the long run, it did stop people from kind of jumping on with New York ingredients.
Yeah.
And New York ingredients, so I'm Strong Rope Brewery. We're a small brewery in Gowanus. We're two barrels, and at this point we're using 100% New York ingredients for all of our beers. So we've taken on that kind of mantle of trying to learn it and be at the forefront and play around with these ingredients and see what they can do and try to present themselves in the best light possible. Through the best beers possible in our styles. We tend to do English and American style ales, if you will. There's a lot of like touchy little things with this. There's a lot of breweries that just don't want to play with those ingredients for certain reasons. Part of it is they don't think the quality's there. Part of it, they don't understand that the quality's there. Part of it, they think is the the price is not right. And to a point, some of these are true. And you know, all these make sense to those certain breweries. But, you know, if you're going to try to brew a New England-style IPA right now, if you want those juicy characters, you're not necessarily going to get those out of New York hops. Because the New York hops that we're playing with are all predominantly old school varieties, you know, Cascade, Centennial, Chinook, Nugget, Mount Hood, Willamette. So there's not a ton of things coming to the market at the moment that are pushing the boundaries. And what a lot of hoppy breweries right now is they want to push the boundaries, they want to play with that, or they're trying to play catch up to those breweries that are doing that, because there's all these experimental varieties coming out of the West Coast that people are playing with, you know, before it used in it at, you know, Citra, Mosaic, you know, all these other things came out from these different regions and they were new and exciting and they were this and that. And now, you know, the breweries that are like kind of at the forefront of hop forward beers are playing with things that are experimental. They don't even have names. And they're playing with these things years before they're going to have a name before the market. And then when that market comes, the breweries that weren't quite on that forefront but are on the next edge are going to be like looking for those. While in New York, we're just trying to, you know, reorganize ourselves into a hop and malt growing region. You know, prior to Prohibition, there was 50,000 over 40,000 acres of hops grown in New York, and now it's gone to a much smaller amount, about like 400.
Yeah, and also I would say that the hops, even when you grow like a Cascade hop in New York State, it's not necessarily going to exhibit the aroma and flavor and chemical, you know.
No, the oils, that,
right.
All of it's going to showcase itself a little different because of the growing region, the climate, all of that stuff. So while I kind of take that and try to showcase that and see what you can do, it's not necessarily, it's dependent upon where it's grown. It's dependent on the stock that you got it from. It's dependent upon the grower. Mm-hmm. You know, it's this thing that like is somewhat nebulous and can change from year to year. You know, for the last 3 years, we've been over 3 years. We have not had the same growing season, weather, all of that has changed every year. So it's the growers that we work with, they're great growers and they're working their asses off and putting out some amazing stuff. But they're having to deal with these varied conditions on, you know, it's, you know, predominantly in the Pacific Northwest, it's a dry, arid climate, you know, so they have a very, it used to be very steady. I don't know what it is right now. I'm sure there's probably some stuff going on with all of weather patterns and everything and climate. But here it's so different and they're really trying to kind of get a hold of it and get a sense of what to do. But each year is so different, so they don't even know. But in the end, it's like, okay, so the Cascade and the on the North Fork of Long Island versus the Cascade and the Finger Lakes versus the Cascade and the Hudson Valley to the Central Region to the, you know, the Adirondack Pacific, the north end of New York. It's, there's all these different things and all, so you get all these, there's different regions and it's really cool, but it's also not necessarily the sexiest thing. So,
well, it might take a little more thought. And I think, you know, it depends on your kind of how your brewery is set up, right? If you are a larger scale brewery that is selling a whole heck of a lot of cans, you know, whether that be inside or outside of your brewery, that's a little more chat, you know, you're trying to meet public demand, right? But if you're able to have a tasting room where people can come and they want to drink different things, they want to try maybe something new, they don't have necessarily that expectation that they're going to find, you know, one style of beer there, then that's the great opportunity. And I think that's where personally, like we've had at Fifth Hammer, like we're able to make beers that don't, you know, they're maybe not the sexiest beers, right? The hottest styles, because somebody is going to drink them. Not everybody is drinking, you know, these super fruited sours or hazy IPAs. For instance, you know, people are drinking across the board. So I think, you know, like, for instance, I think a lot, some of the New York State hops that we've used in the past, either with Cousette or Fifth Hammer, we've used, had some really good results with Belgian style beers.
Yeah.
Absolutely lovely. So I think, you know, I think it's interesting, but for us to do it, it is, you know, we don't have nearly as much experience. You are working with these guys all the time,
right?
And both the products and the farmers themselves, the growers themselves. So let's talk about some of your favorite New York State hops to use right now and what you've used them in.
Yeah. So we kind of narrowed it down. When we first started, when we first opened, we had about 12 different hop farms that we worked with because it was a blanket kind of, I think we reached out to 30 some odd hop farms just so that we could have enough. I didn't know what was out there, who had what. It was just kind of, do you have hops? Can we have it?
Yes.
So we got a lot. We had a good response. You know, out of that, we had less than half of the people respond. So from there, we've whittled it down to about 6 or 7 or so farms that we've think that are just putting out great stuff. To name a few, it's a Willett hop farms outside of Binghamton, Chimney Bluffs, who we were just with up in Sodus, the Vineyard outside of in Cazenovia, Crooked Creeks, Peterson Hops. I know I'm forgetting people, so I apologize. But in terms of the actual hops, it's again, we're going with these for the most part classic varieties, Centennial, Newport, Nugget, Cascade, Chinook. The only varieties that we're kind of playing with that are new are kind of twofold. It's a Michigan Copper and Mackinac, which are coming out of Michigan from Great Lake Hops. But then we're also playing with a couple old school heirloom varieties that some of the growers are working with, like Indian Ladder Farmstead, who we worked with. So we're trying to play with these different varieties and create these unique characters. Anything from a blonde ale, IPA, brown, so we're stouts, you know, we're playing with all kind of across the spectrum of in terms of styles. And we're trying to, you know, create these unique profiles with what we have. And these hops are great. And it depends on the farm that you go to. It depends on the year. So we're still, you know, even in our third year, we're like, okay, well, what are we actually getting this year? Really, what, you know, when this farm brewery license came into effect in 2012, what should have happened, and I don't think it quite did the way that it should have, was that we should have, you know, there needed to be a concerted effort to create varieties that were specific to New York and that were propagated here and grown here for the market here, but also abroad, but that was a driving force of hops in this state. Because what's happening right now is we're playing with these varieties, and while the Cascade here or the Centennial here might be unique compared to out west, you know what we're doing there, it's we're nuances. It's nuanced, and it's differentiating. But you're asking someone to talk about like nuanced differentiation when if you have Citra or these other, you know, like those are just like such a different kind of ball field. You're playing with a different palette. So until we are creating our own, propagating and breeding our own hops in New York, we're always going to be playing kind of second fiddle. We're going to be following in the footsteps, because we're going to be like Citra eventually will become a non-proprietary hop, and it will trickle its way down here and we'll be able to use it. The Michigan hops are making their way here, but we're always following. We're not leading, and we need to be leading.
But there is some hop breeding going on, right? Isn't Cornell have a program?
It's a little. I don't know the full extent of the program.
We'll have to save that for. We'll see if we can do a future show with Cornell agriculturist.
Because I know they're doing stuff, but I don't know. So I guess I shouldn't talk because I don't know exactly where they are. But I don't think it's as robust as I would like to see. And it didn't start immediately after. Right. Do you know more?
I don't. And it kind of makes sense because, this is it took the Yakima Valley a long time, many years to get to where they are.
It takes a decade for a hop to come to market.
Yes. So I think, you know, a lot of these things might be in place or starting to get in place. Right,
we should be seeing, future. Like, so it's year seven, and all the growers that I talk to have not. There's no dissemination of information, and like they should be getting trials, you know, and no one's hearing about that, and it's just not I feel like the malt has a much more cohesiveness to it. They still have their own issues. They're still figuring out what varieties of barley work in New York, and they're getting all this stuff, and there's a lot of work to do there. So they're doing an amazing job, and I feel like there's a little bit more understanding. They have better overall programs that are at least available and visible to brewers like me, where I feel the hops there needs to be a little bit more cohesion and working together and understanding and growth and dissemination of information, because you can go to one hop farm, you know, up in one part of the state and just see like what you know, it's like looking at like Pacific Northwest, you know, style yields, and then you go to a bunch of other ones in the state and they don't have the knowledge or the manpower or whatever they're doing. They're just not there. And it's everything within that.
Yeah.
It's like, there's a spectrum. There's this great big, and it's everything within that. And it's like, we could be great creating great stuff here. And I've tasted it. And we, you know, I brought some beers that we can try and do that. But I think we need to. There's a lot that we need to do as a as state, as brewers, as farmers, as malt houses, and to really bring us to that next level.
Cool. And on that note, we're going to take a brief break. We'll break open one of these beers and get them poured for us, and we'll be back with more Ferment About It.
Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. Since the early 1900s, Emmy has been a passionate supporter of farmers, cheesemakers, and family tradition. They believe in sustainable agriculture and respect for the people, land, and animals that make their business possible. Remaining dedicated to tradition, they strive to lead the industry in innovation, ensuring they bring you only the highest quality, best-tasting cheese from Switzerland. Emmy is best known for importing more than 80% of the Swiss Gruyere into the United States, but that's not to overshadow their other specialty cheeses, including Kaltbach Cave Age cheeses, Der Scharfe Max, Appenzeller, Tête de Moine, and traditional Emmentaler. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
And we're back to Ferment About It on heritageradionetwork.org. Today we are here with Jason Saylor of Strong Rope, who has some strong feelings about the the brewery license.
Sorry.
We are also here with Jeff. No, it's great. We're also here with Jeff Lyons of Keg and Lantern.
I know we could do multiple shows on...
We could just have a show up where a panel talks about their feelings about the brewer's license.
A lot of feelings.
Oh, man.
All the feelings.
All right, so let's...
We'd all get in trouble with that.
Yeah, there. We might. No. No, it's good. I think, you know, we all want to see improvement. There are a lot... do you know the current number of farm breweries in New York State?
The last number I heard was about 200.
Yeah, that's...
And there's over 400 regular breweries... Oh, overall breweries in the state.
It's... Yeah, New York State is thriving.
There's a lot of breweries.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. So during the break, you poured us a drink here. What is this?
Yeah, so this is 24-Hour Dancer. This is one of our pale ales. It's a New York Craft Erie Canal Pale Malt with Michigan Copper hops from Willett Hop and Centennial from Peterson.
This is delicious.
This is really smooth.
Yeah. It is.
this is both in the boil and in the dry hop.
The Michigan Copper hops, you said?
Both. Both the Michigan Copper and the Centennial.
Okay, cool.
It's just, you know, what we tend to do in Strong Rope is create pretty classic beers. Part of it is for me kind of coming from a homebrew background, jumping into a commercial brewery on my own. I felt like I needed to get back to, you know, just kind of do the basics and learn, you know, it's like learning art. Like I'm learning how to paint. Like I'm learning the figure drawings right now. Like, and we're still playing around, but I like just being this kind of simplified and, you know, let's just play with these ingredients and really see what they're doing. And, you know, I mean, Jeff is doing the same thing. He's doing some amazing stuff at Keg and Lantern as well.
On a much slower pace, a much smaller scale, just based on the number of beers that we're putting out. As much as we love to embrace 100% New York ingredient beers, I've just been a little bit more hesitant because we don't have that as a stamp, as a flag in the ground saying we are this thing. And I think, you know, we admire what you're doing and support you so much and just have so much love for what you're doing and want to do that. But if we're not set up from day one to do that, we're like, well, let's just support Jason and love what Jason does, and we'll we'll make our beers here and there that we do, and we actually have a few that we do keep up pretty regularly. I mean, we have 100% New York ingredient Pilsner. We have 100% New York ingredient Pale Ale, which really could probably pass as an IPA if we really wanted to push those envelopes and kind of blur that distinction. I mean, there certainly are ingredients that allow you to do these things. It's just how many, how much.
But that's important.
I think that one of the things, just drawing from one of the things you said in the first segment, was I never want to disagree with you, and I don't want you to take it this way.
Let's have at it, please. Man. Let's do
I mean,
this.
We'll drop them and go.
I'll throw you through that window.
We'll do it. But I heard you say that we're sort of behind, or we're playing catch up, or something to that effect. And I think there are so many people in this state that feel that way. And I really know deep in your heart of hearts that you don't feel that the way that came out. And I think that what we need to keep in perspective, and I'm about to throw a paraphrase of one of the quotes that gets quoted to me from people who know you repeatedly, and I think it's awesome. It's become a legacy, which is just beautiful. But I you've said things like, you know, like craft beer drinkers want different. Well, this is different. Like, do you really want different, or do you just want the same beer with a different named hop, even though it's going to taste essentially more or less the same as the previous beer with a different named hop? Whereas when you're embracing what you've embraced, and you're embracing 100% New York ingredients, and all of these people who are growing them, all the people who are malting this grain, all of the people who are growing the hops and processing these hops, there's a beauty to embracing that and embracing the actual difference and what you can come to create with that. It is going to be very, very different than trying to just use all of the best European malts and all of the best Pacific Northwest hops. And yes, every brewery can open a brewery and make a New England IPA or a juicy IPA or double IPA or this or that. And I think that what you're doing and what I hope to follow in the footsteps of eventually is embracing that difference and the uniqueness of these grains and these hops. And watching what you've done over the past 3 years has been pretty amazing. And going from where you started, which was a beautiful representation of what these New York ingredients are, and watching what you've learned yourself over the past 3 years and the way that these beers are all being presented now, it's pretty astounding to watch that growth. And it's really encouraging. And I think that for somebody like myself, it's absolutely inspiring to and motivational to think about where we can all go with all of these. You're doing an incredible job of exploring the styles that you really hold close to your heart. And I think there are some of us that just have different styles that we love. And as much as we love what you're doing, we're sort of taking inspiration from what you've done with these ingredients and kind of want to attack it in a different way. And, you know, you sort of...
Which is important.
I joke about you and I being able to open breweries next to each other, because as much as where our heart and soul is coming from the same place and pushing in the same direction, if you took the Venn diagram of, like, the beers that you want to make and the beers that I want to make, ultimately... there's that little tiny crossover in the middle, but I mean, we'd work so well together, and anybody who wants anything would be happy one place or the other. But I just think that you've sort of opened a lot of our eyes and given us a lot of inspiration as to what really can be done, and really, to me, spoken to me about. I really genuinely feel that I could in the very near future open a brewery, commit to 100% New York ingredients in the way that you've embraced, do something quite different than what you're doing, but aspire in the same way to making really genuinely world-class beers using these ingredients. And I don't necessarily know that any of us really would have felt that way a number of years ago. And I think we're really at that point where we can aspire to that and really genuinely feel like we can get there in a pretty near future type situation.
Also, everyone that knows you, Jason, knows that you're way too humble. I'm just saying. Good, stay humble. But, and I think, you know, what Jeff is saying is true. And, you know, we kind of joke. I've gotten a little bit sarcastic. But, you know, there is New England IPAs and now I think these super fruited sours are the rage. That's the shit that gets the buzz on Instagram, right? The gazillion likes and all of that stuff. But not everybody's drinking that. People are drinking everything. I mean, even in, you know, and I have personally, because, you know, we run this tasting room, so it's been a really cool thing to see. People are drinking things across the board. And, you know, we had, like, Christy, a Belgian Golden Blonde. Hmm. That was the best, like, our best seller many, many days. Hmm. So, nice. You know, we've had, you know, I mean, and these are all, like, and look, I'll be honest. When I go out to drink, I'm not ordering a New England IPA. Right. I'd rather order this pale ale or somebody's Pilsner or, you know, so look, the tide might be turning at some point. Let's just be honest. People not only now drink everything, but they're going to continue to drink that way. So, you know.
We always joke, right, about when brewers end up in a room, the completely different taps that are getting poured. But I think Jason touched on that from day one. And I think that's why any given day, if you randomly show up at Strong Rope, you're going to run into somebody you know if you're in this industry, because so many of us genuinely love the beers that you're making, and they're basically brewer's beers. Many of us feel lucky to make one or two of those at a time, and you're kind of making an entire business out of it.
I'm just not listening to the market, that's all. I'm just doing what I want to do.
But wait, I want to talk about this beer, though. So, what this malt profile is awesome, first of all.
Yes, that was the, I believe it was the New York Craft Erie Canal Pale. It's
100% Erie Canal Pale.
Super simple. It's a super simple beer.
Like, it's clean. I mean, it's a very clean malt, but it also has almost that, like, I don't know that nuttiness would be the right word, but almost that kind of, you know, I always associate Maris Otter with, like, that nuttiness, like that extra depth, like that extra richness.
Ted's Pale's got a really nice kind of backbone, and Ted Hawley from New York Craft Malt, by the way, sorry.
Who's an awesome guy.
Yeah, and super, super knowledgeable and intense about his malts and loves it and is everywhere and is just great. And he's making great stuff on a very on a relatively small scale. I think it's like probably the second biggest malt house in the state, but that's not, you know, saying that much. But they're doing a killer job and creating a variety. And he's actually the first one in the state to be producing roasted malts, which has allowed us to jump to 100% New York ingredients across the board, because before we were making a lot of our specialty beers, or not a lot of our specialty beers, a lot of our beers that use specialty malts, like the stouts and the browns and the reds, were not using New York State ingredients because it just wasn't available. And he's been able to do that and push us you know, across that board and you know, really excited to be able to do that. And, you know, I love working with his staff and I love working with him and it's I think it's such a good flavor profile and great to work with. You know, all of the, like, the brewer things, like the great efficiency, you know, lottery and all that stuff. Like, it's just a really nice profile, and it's and I think that's important. And I think that, you know, he takes great care and all that, and so that's you know, kind of why we stuck with him and you know, I mean, sorry, I just want to jump back to kind of what you said before.
But I think what you're speaking to is that Ted has created, at least in the, I think maybe across the board, but particularly with his Pilsner malt, he's created something that we expect when we order a Pilsner malt from Germany or where have you, where, you know, France, Belgium, and any of these traditional places where these Pilsner malts that are deemed like the best in the world and the most sought after, you can get those in and you can create any style of beer with that as your base malt. And I can definitely attest to the fact that we have used Ted's Pilsner malt, New York craft malt, Pilsner malt across the board, and just made really pretty exceptional beers no matter the style. Like you can use it as the base, you can use it as 100% in the backbone. There's actually some homebrew sitting on the table from myself that is that, but you can also do some of the things I've tasted in
and this is
that you've
mixed
done
firm, right?
Yes, but my point being that you can add specialty malts, whether it be from him or somebody else, and that he lays the base that allows you to go so many different directions.
But I don't think you should be so. I didn't mean to cut you off, but the mixed firm is an important thing because I'm doing very clean kind of classic American English styles, even if they're slightly off. You know, maybe not exactly 100%. They're in that vein. And it's good to see people using these ingredients in all different styles, whether it's saisons or mixed fermentation beers or lagers or whatever. It's important that these beers, these ingredients are explored in the entire ecosystem of beers so that we can all...
grab one of those glasses.
And I think that's important. So it's because I'm not going to be doing those types of things. And I think that's where that Venn diagram comes back into play.
Exactly.
Is that, you know, we have this, and that's what I want to see in this, in how, and that's why one of the great things of like why we work where we work, you know, we're in Gowanus. Threes is four blocks north of us. Other half is not, you know, 20-minute walk. Folk Spears right there. Mm-hmm. And they're all such different breweries. And they make such different beers. And they make such great beers. And it's such a cool thing. And you know, it pushes me to be very cognizant, even though we're different, about, like, how good our beer needs to be. Because we need to be, you know, I mean... Other half is listed as one of the, you know, the world's best in like a lot of polls, and other threes is winning the state award like two years in a row. Like these are the lagers coming out of Folk Spear. It's awesome, and it's so cool to be a part of this scene and stuff. So I want to make sure that even, you know, that what we're doing. And that this step that we're taking to work with New York ingredients is showcasing those ingredients. I don't want our beers to be, you know, I don't want to showcase at such a young age these malt houses and these hop farmers in a bad light, because that could easily go to turn people off of them, because everyone's look, there's no one, not many people are doing it. So it's very easy to kind of, if you're not doing it in the right way, it's very easy at this point to kind of sour the entire idea about using New York State ingredients.
While I love where this conversation is going, and it's so great, we have a few minutes left. We really need, I really want to hear about this Scottish yeast that's going on. What are you doing with Scottish yeast? Why use Scottish yeast? What are the special properties of opposed to?
I gotta be honest, yeast. I'm like, man, I know. We should continue this in another show, but
can I buy 30 seconds before you start in your explanation as to how you use this? So I was fortunate enough to have Ben and Danielle, who were just in town, work. I was able to work for them at Brooklyn Homebrew, and Jason was one of our many repeat customers who we loved watching come in and got excited when we'd see him walk in the door, right? But we were always super excited to see what Jason was going to brew. But I used to laugh and be like, well, how many packs do you want? It was never which yeast. It was always, do you want one or do you want two? It was always Scottish. And it was so intriguing, like such an interesting... Jason was at the forefront of thinking about Scottish yeast and what it was able to do and the wide array of beers he was able to make with it, and it was enlightening to me then, and it's awesome to watch that grow.
Honestly, it was due to laziness. At the beginning.
Don't kill my dream.
Sorry. No, the Scotta. I had been brewing a bunch with a different a couple different styles of yeast. I had some American, I had some English. What I found was that the Scottish ale yeast strain, for me, gave a very a really nice profile on both kind of a clean fermented or, you know, like low ester profile to a more, prominent ester profile at higher temperature. So like low temperature, clean, higher temperature, estery.
More fruity, Englishy, primarily, right?
Yeah, more fruity, stone fruit, apricot, that type of thing. What I realized was like, well, like, you know, if I'm going to start a brewery, like, I don't have great experience with doing all of, you know, a lot of yeast management. So I tried to make it as easy on myself.
Yeast management takes time. So
and time and experience. Yeah, and it's not a, you know, it every beer is different and how you treat it is different. So to me, it was trying to create, I knew that I was going to open a brewery and I was like, well, let's, I'm going from a homebrew to a professional brewery size. Let's try to minimize the things that could go wrong. Before I opened, I started homebrewing with the Scottish ale yeast strain. From there, I was able to see, okay, we can manipulate it in ways, while we're brewing what we're doing, to create unique profiles. You know, if we go really low, like 60, it almost has like, I don't want to say a lager-like character, but has a really, really clean character that we do with our cream ale, that we've done with our Kentucky Common. You know, it's not exactly, but and a couple other beers. Or if we jump up to like on the higher end of the range, 68 degrees, we're getting some nice like stone fruit. And I've also found that if you kind of slightly underpitch or stress it, you get this amazing, almost strawberry berry flavor out of it. So we've done that accidentally a couple times. More recently, we've actually purposely tried it and we've gotten the same results. Where we made Lazy Stargazer, which is our strawberry seasonal, and I stressed the yeast in that way, and even before we put the strawberries on, it had such a, you know, berry strawberry character, also with Ted's malt, and it really awesome thing. So if it's something that we can keep on replicating and keep on playing with. And it has such versatility. You can do really low alcohol beers to really high alcohol beers. For me, it's like it's the perfect yeast for what we want to do because it has such versatility and mobility and ways to express itself in ways for us to try to express what we want to get out in those beers.
And I can attest to this because, so when I sat down with Brett and you were, we were tasting beers with Jason and I was like, wait, this is Scottish ale yeast? This is all, I mean, yeah, you're getting completely different profiles using very similar, you know, you're not doing anything crazy with the malt or the hops in those beers. You're just, it's really yeast driven. So I was really, really impressed. I will just say it's super cool.
Thank you.
And I never use Scottish ale yeast as a home brewer. So
I mean, I think I kind of probably stumbled on it at Brooklyn Homebrew with Jeff and Ben and Danielle and whoever else was there at that time and like those guys. I honestly don't remember exactly. I remember that I used to use the what was it? 1956, or was that English?
The Fuller's strain?
No, I don't remember. 1968.
Yeah.
What, Fuller's?
Fuller's strain.
Okay. So I used
ESB?
Yeah. So I used that, and then I think at one point you didn't have it, and I jumped onto like the Scottish or something like that. I don't know. It was
happy mistake.
Yeah, right? Happy mistake. And then I was just like, oh, I really like this. And I was just like, all right, well, let's do it. And I read about it and I was like, oh, it seems very, pretty versatile. Let's keep it going. We're going to open a brewery.
I only want to manage one yeast. So, again, lazy.
But very effective.
Yeah.
Because that cream ale, because that was the cream ale.
So that's at the low end. Yeah. That's super, we slow fermented at 60 degrees. So it's on the low, probably somewhat below what they actually call for. And which you can actually come to Strong Rope Brewery at 574 President Street next Tuesday for the Cream Ale Young Lion of the West in cans. First time it's ever in cans, people.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Mm.
So, I don't know. I just love our brewing scene. It's true. It's so good. I did a call out for dishwasher advice because we need a new dishwasher.
I know. I wish I could have. I saw
thought
that
was going to come up on the show today, but maybe a different time.
I don't have a dishwasher.
But I just have to say, I emailed. So the New York City Brewers Guild uses a Google group to communicate online. And I emailed the Google group, and I've had so many people get back to me with such great advice. Anyway, it's just great. Yes, this beer is also delicious.
Didn't want to jump in your.
All right, we got to go. But Jeff, I want to tell you. I want you to tell us about this beer real quick.
Okay, 30-second elevator pitch is this is 100% Pilsner malt from Ted from New York Craft Malt. I've been doing a whole bunch of home brews. I had a quick blip where I stopped home brewing. For maybe a year or so, and I'm back in it, and I'm on a every 3 weeks clip where I'm doing split batches of the same wort and then pitching one half with lager yeast and making basically a pilsner out of it, and one half in with this mix culture that I started with bottle dregs, which is what we're having now. So this particular one is and so far it's 100% New York craft malt pilsner base every single beer. Yay, Ted. Yay, hey, Ted and Patricia.
Awesome.
I love him, and I love them, and yeah, I love what great. They give us. But I also, so each iteration has a different hop so that I can start to learn more and more and more about what New York hops are giving us. And this particular iteration is Newport from Willett Hop Farms.
Nice. Yeah.
In a mixed culture that will hopefully... that I love and that I think dominates all of the beers. And I've just realized that it doesn't matter which hop I put in this culture dominates and makes a really nice beer. And I just sit back and like take credit for what this mixed culture does. It's pretty awesome. So we'll see where this goes, but this hopefully will be a workhorse for me one day, whenever that comes to do my own thing. Yeah.
Nice.
Well, thank you guys so much for being on. So yes, please. I mean, that's a great thing about New York City is that there, first of all, are over 35 breweries now, I think, that you can actually physically visit. And
36 starting next week.
And and we have great public transportation here. So it is really easy to get around and be able to do not only neighborhood brewery crawls, but also just easily transition from one brewery to the next using public transportation or your favorite
ride sharing
person company, which we have a lot. We have at least four or five ride sharing companies. Anyway, so it's cool. So if you do come to New York City, please visit Jason at Strong Rope. Jason, when is your tap room open?
Our tap room is open Tuesday through Sunday. Again in Gowanus on 574 President Street between 3rd and 4th Avenue.
And then Jeff.
Yeah, Keg and Lanyard opens at 11 o'clock every single day of the week. And
goes
until pretty late. It varies, but yeah, pretty late every night.
Yeah, awesome.
Go get those beers.
Thank you guys so much for listening. We are planning a very exciting season.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really excited to be back, actually, Rachel. I was a little nervous because we haven't been in the studio for a while, but I'm really excited.
Yeah, so. I'm back. I'm excited to start planning some interesting things for the season. So if you guys have any ideas or if you guys want to like hear about anything in particular or from anyone in particular in the homebrew scene or in the fermentation scene, reach out to us. We're on Twitter at @FermentAboutIt. We're on Instagram at @FermentAboutIt. We're on Facebook on Ferment About It, and we have an email address, fermentaboutit@gmail.com.
And we would also love to talk about an audience recipe, tip, trick, whatever ferment you do at home. We would love to have your tips and tricks and recipe and share them with our listeners. So please, communicate with us one of those ways. We'd love to hear from you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah. We'll be back. Full men about it.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.